Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
The wait is over. The Chi returns with new episodes on Paramount Plus.
What brings you to the Chi?
Opportunity.
Everybody get down!
A new rain is coming to the South Side.
Never should have sent a boy to do a woman's job.
The Chi. New episodes May 10th. Visit ParamountPlus.com/The Chi to get a 50% discount off the Paramount Plus with Showtime annual plan. Offer ends July 14th. Subscription auto renews. Restrictions apply.
From producers Matt Damon and Ben Affleck, explore how art and music sustained hope during the siege of Sarajevo. Thanks in part to humanitarians and the band U2. Kiss the Future. New documentary now streaming exclusively on Paramount Plus. Go to Paramount Plus to try it free. Terms apply.
Welcome in to another edition of the Husker 24/7 Hoops Cast. I am Mike Chaver, joined by Brian Christofferson. And Nebraska was tantalizingly close to what felt like, Brian, a real, real strong resume that's almost unassailable at that point. But in basketball, and especially college basketball, being close matters not. And you got to win. Nebraska was not able to do it. We will dive into that game against Illinois here, and we will set up the week ahead for Nebraska basketball, which once again, at worst, needs to go 1-1, and at best, 2-0 would do wonders for this team and where they hope to be when the season ends, or the regular season ends, not just in conference play, but also beyond. So we will dive into We will dive into all of that, and we'll just get started right here. What was your sort of – at what point did you think Nebraska was going to be able to maintain and stay in that game throughout against Illinois? Did you waver at all in the second half with the way it started? Did you think that they had that run in them to kind of keep things going? Walk me through the Brian Christofferson internal thought process as Nebraska starts off pretty well against Illinois, weather's a bit of a storm, claws its way back, and, you know, for the lack of a better term, has possibly a win taken from them.
Yeah, to your first question, I was curious coming out of the break, because I knew Illinois would come with a pretty hard punch against the ropes, and they did. They built it up, I think, to a 7-point lead very quickly. But Nebraska, by about the 10-minute mark, I remember there was a timeout, and it was, I think, 57-55 Illinois. And so at that point, you're like, okay, if Nebraska can get this thing to like the, under six timeout and about the same shape, they could pull this thing off. But there were also these cracks in the wall that were starting to form more and bigger and bigger in the second half when it came to Illinois' offensive rebounds. They were just starting to pile up, and there was some foul trouble you were worried about. And honestly, Schaefer, this is why the game was so fascinating. After about the 10-minute mark of the second half, the game didn't go like how you would want it to at all for Nebraska, you know, in that next segment. There was a long stretch where there wasn't a TV timeout until about 5 to 5.5 minutes left, and you could tell both teams were gassed.
Nebraska, you had players like waving at their bench, like letting the coach know, I gotta go out.
I could get a breath.
You could see Juwan Gary like at one point like trying to catch someone's attention, and you almost never see it where I think there was like 6 or 7 guys that were sitting there in front of the scorer's table just like waiting for minutes to come into a game.
There was a line change from both sides coming in, and it wasn't just Nebraska. I mean, both sides were huffing and puffing, but there was that moment for about a minute and a half of 2 minutes of game action where it was like that, where both teams were tired in hoisting up shots that weren't going in. And I kept thinking like, if one team has a guy who amidst this hit, like hits that shot, you know, or hits a three or something, it's going to be huge. And nobody ever got it. Nebraska finally called a timeout down six. And then Illinois had that stretch where they had only hit 5 3 pointers up until about 5 minutes left in the game, but then they hit three in a row and it was a 10 point game. And it looked pretty bleak at that point. But you know, Hoiberg told him in that timeout, he's like, they can't score another point if we're going to win this game. And he would have been right. I mean, if it would have just been an 11-0 run, that would have been nice. And you give Nebraska credit for the way they chopped back there at the end. Cause there was a point where you wondered if it might end up being like a 15 point loss. And then Bryce hits the three to cut it to seven. You get it down to five. And I think Illinois got a little tight the last 2 minutes as Nebraska was coming on, and they weren't sound with the ball. And I don't know about the foul call at the end. I don't want to make this a whole thing about officiating, but there were some rough calls, I thought. The worst call to me, we can get to the overtime. This was the worst call of them all, Schaefer, was the foul on Hoiberg, Sam Hoiberg, actually, when Nebraska's down one, and I feel like had a jump ball or stole the ball very cleanly. And they called the foul. It would have been Nebraska ball up or down one with 25 seconds left in OT. But the foul call at regulation, I can see where you could call it. But the way they had officiated that game, I didn't think it fit with like a lot of what happened in the preceding 39 minutes and 57 seconds.
Yeah, I mean, there's no question that foul relative to how they allowed, you know, not just Illinois, but largely Illinois to play defense. And that's what happens at State Farm Arena. Like, how Illinois plays isn't new or different. Like, that they're always really aggressive. They're always like, you know, there's just teams, and I joke about this, but you know, Michigan football is the same way, and other teams are similar. I feel like in the NFL, the Lions and the Eagles and the Saints are all very similar in this regard. Get physical and make the people whose job it is to enforce the rules enforce the rules. And they didn't on one end of the court for a large portion of that game, or else Nebraska shooting a lot more free throws than they did. And unfortunately, CJ Wilcher got called for something that happens a million times in a game. And there was less contact there than there was at center court for Rinkmast at the end of overtime for Nebraska, but those are the breaks. And, you know, it's unfortunate because they played their ass off to get into that position. And I think after the Hoiberg tie-up, wasn't that when Josiah Alex stole the ball? Like on just a...
Yeah, this was when it was...
a criminally dumb inbounds pass for Illinois. And you said this, I think, in a way, but they were really skittish at the end of that game. Like they just weren't. Oh, yeah. They were not a team that felt like they had been in that moment a lot. Nebraska just had them kind of on their heels in the last probably 2.5 minutes from everything from ball handling to defense to all of it. I mean, I was impressed that Rinkmast was able to get that look that he did so easily to give Nebraska the lead there at the end of regulation.
Yeah. And it looked like the magical moment for this season. As great as those wins over Wisconsin and Purdue had been, when Rink gets that bucket with 9 seconds left, it's 73-72. And you're like, man, one stop. And they actually forced Domask, I think, into a tough spot on the court. Like, I think Nebraska, it was working out exactly as he wanted. And if you looked at, like, who was around the rim to try to clean up his miss if there had not been a foul, I know Nebraska struggled all second half defensive rebounding, but they were in good position to just like seal it there. It was probably over. So that's tough. But yeah, the call that I was bringing up was it was 83-82 in overtime, 27 seconds left. The officials know Nebraska is going to trap there. And they know that Nebraska's got enough time to try to force a turnover. So they're not just like reaching in to foul necessarily right away. So you have to keep that in mind. And instead of anticipating that there's going to be a foul, maybe anticipate, hey, they're going to want to play defense for 8 to 10 seconds, possibly, and see if they can force a turnover. Nebraska had it perfectly set up where they got the trap. Hoiberg got in there. And I watched it back. He got all ball. He got all ball twice, and he kind of stole it then. He actually had the ball, but I heard the whistle, and I thought, oh, they're going to call jump. That's what I thought. Like, to me, it could be no other call. And I said I wasn't going to talk about officiating. Here I am 3 minutes into the rant. But
if there was a game where you were going to do it from a perspective of this season, this would be the one that's.
Well, there's so much riding on it. I mean, there is. Like, Nebraska's trying to break a 10-year drought. And as you set it up at the beginning, if Nebraska wins that game by 1.73-72 or whatever in overtime right now, the whole picture is we're not as nervous Nellies about everything and what's going to happen down the stretch. They still have work to do, but they would have had such a big resume add. And so that's where I give like Hoiberg and the team credit. He didn't talk about the officials and all that stuff. He didn't make it about that. And that's what you got to do as a head coach. But there were some tough breaks, I thought. And that foul / jump ball call on Sam, and obviously the one on Rink late, probably should have been a foul too. Should have been. And it didn't happen though. And so you lose the game. And this is where it's going to get tough. You got to come back and you got to play a Northwestern team that has lost a couple close ones in a row that you beat only a couple weeks ago by 6 points in your arena, which was a tough win in your building. And you got to go beat them when they're kind of against the wall themselves. Like they feel like they got to have this game. And so I'm different than some people. You know, you'll sometimes someone will say, oh, they're on a little losing skid or whatever. I like when teams are at a high point a little bit.
You want Wisconsin coming in after some wins.
Yeah. You want them feeling like kind of good about themselves. Like, yeah, we could have, we dropped it. Is it the worst thing in the world? You know, like Northwestern not in that. They're like, we got to have this game and we owe them one. So that's what Nebraska's got to beat on Wednesday. So there's going to be folks who look at it and be like, well, you go toe to toe with Illinois. Why can't you do it with Northwestern? Every game's a different animal and you got to just like get yourself fired up to go 40 minutes really hard. And they've just got to be better on the defensive glass. They fixed the turnover problem, only had 9 of them against Illinois. That was good. But now the defensive glass has got to pick up.
Yeah. Real quickly on the thought process of you'd rather catch a team when they're winning some games like that. Do you think that just stems from a lifetime of waiting for the other shoe to drop with the various teams? Like, you know, the Twins are on a hot streak and it's like, okay, here comes the bullpen. Or you know, the Vikings have won 3 in a row. And it's like, all right, I've seen this. Yeah. I know how it goes.
You know where I think it is for me? When I was a kid, when Sports Illustrated was Sports Illustrated, someone wrote a line.
That should be a podcast, right?
Yeah. Whatever happened the last couple of weeks, that's not Sports Illustrated. So whatever happens, happens. But the one that we knew as kids, that version, someone wrote once, they're writing about how wounded animals are the most dangerous. Somebody wrote a line. And I remember as a 13 or 14 year old, like thinking about that, I was like, oh, that's such it really hit. It was like the biggest thought I ever had. Like, oh man, that's true in sports and probably in life. Like I was starting to get, trying to get deep and I never could with most thoughts, but, but yeah. So I think it goes back to then, like I've always been like wary in sports of the wounded animal, the team that's like everyone's saying they're done, you know, they lost a couple. Those teams always you got to watch out for.
So that Michigan game on Saturday really has your attention. Because a wounded Wolverine might be the scariest of them all.
Well, I think we'll get to these games, but those are scary, yes, because like one trip where one game where you shoot 34% at home and lose the, you know, them and man, it could throw everything off whack. Everybody's sort of acting like it's just going to hold court. Like they're going to get 10-0 now, maybe. You got to like go out there and fight because it's not, I mean, Michigan, as bad as they've been. You know that like they have dudes who can ball on their roster and you've watched Nebraska teams in your life that have won like 4 conference games or something one year, you know, or they're just not good, but they'll always have that like one game where they kind of find it, you know, and they beat somebody they shouldn't or whatever. And that could, you know, you got to be wary that Michigan or somebody can do that down the stretch too.
Yeah, I mean, what was it, 2 years ago, the Nebraska team had a fairly lengthy losing streak, went into the Kohl Center and beat up on Wisconsin in a place where Nebraska never wins. Like, it happens. And it, there's definitely some Nebraska examples where they have had some games where it's like this, you chalk it up as a win, and it doesn't go that way. As we close out the Illinois thing, I do want to talk about this because I brought it up at the end of the Purdue podcast. I think we did. I felt like there was some people that were like ready to do the "see I told you so" on Keisei Tominaga thing, because he had those three kind of games in a row and he didn't look like himself even against Northwestern. He hit that huge three, so that certainly looked like it. But man, you can tell, like, there are just some nights where that guy is just going to be unbelievable. And I thought I could tell pretty early against Illinois, like, he was flying around hunting for shots that weren't just threes. He was letting these defenders get a step too far in and then going right by them and doing the sort of, I mean, has anybody in recent memory been better at that kind of flick the wrist floater over the rim protector than what Keisei can do? I mean, it's like 8 feet out and that ball just kind of floats through the air. He has like this unbelievable ability that he can change his shot in the air. Like, my wife pointed this out. We went back and we watched it. He made a three that was fairly deep early in the first half where it wasn't like his normal ball motion. He goes up and the ball's like a little lower and then he's still able to just like guide his hand exactly where he wants it. Like, he is a special talent in some ways. That, you know, he is just going to be such a huge part for Nebraska. It was nice to see him get back on track against Illinois. And he was a big part of how they were able to hold a lead against the Illini in the first half.
Yeah, he was huge early. And then, you know, even like having a guy like that in overtime, early on in the OT, Illinois got up four. And Keisei hit an incredibly hard three that brought it back to one. And so he just kind of hit shots like that throughout that kind of like kept them around. The thing I tried to say this on the last podcast, because I knew that he still would have a few games where he's going to be either, you know, the difference for Nebraska and winning it, or he's going to put him in contention to. Because if you look at what he's done this season, he had three game stretch, which was a little rough, where he only scored a total of 14 points. Mm-hmm. But I was looking at the numbers prior to that, and this is all against like Big Ten teams. Like, that was a tough game against Northwestern, but he had 14 points and of course hit the big shot. He had 16 against Rutgers, 13 Iowa, 19 against Purdue, 17 against Wisconsin, 28 against Indiana, which I almost forget about. You know, he had a stretch of like, six games and eight of the last 10 where he scored at least 13 points prior to that rough three game patch. So I think he was on a pretty good pace, and I felt like he was kind of being the Big Ten Keisei we saw at the end of last year for the good portion of the first half of the schedule this year. And then there was that little dry spell, which kind of confused things a little bit. But you know, the good news about this team is you've got him and then you've got Wilter. And like, Wilter didn't have a great day shooting it or play as much on Sunday, but Keisei was on fire, so you didn't need it. And just like the other game where Keisei was struggling and only had 2 points against Wisconsin, Wilter was on fire. So you've got these guys who can kind of balance out the scale a little bit if one guy's a little off, and that's nice to have. That's what we haven't always seen with this roster. If you want to just boil it down to that, is like, oh, that guy's off, well, then Nebraska's screwed. Well, it's not necessarily the case with this team.
Yeah, no, I think that's a fair point.
Jeremy Renner returns to Paramount Plus for a brand new season of the original hit series, Mayor of Kingstown.
My job is to create a balance, avoid a war.
From executive producer Taylor Sheridan, co-creator of Yellowstone.
There's some new players in town, and they brought the flag.
And Antoine Fuqua, director of Training Day.
I know it's always been a war zone, Mike, but this is next level.
The mayor is back in business.
Are you warning me?
You're going to find out.
Mayor of Kingstown. New season streaming June 2nd, exclusively on Paramount Plus. The chilling new original docuseries on Paramount Plus.
Why did he kill his family? The answer lies across the ocean in a woman named Sylvie.
She's a can model.
Where desire leads to deception.
I ended up spending $12,000 and $15,000 a day.
It was addictive.
I can't get you out.
And obsession leads to murder.
Who did this to your family?
You can't really maintain a fantasy forever.
Control all desire. Now streaming on Paramount Plus.
This is Tony Kornheiser's show. I'm Tony. You expected someone else? So what exactly is the show about? I don't know. It's a sports show nominally. Football's over, but we're finally at a point where things matter in college basketball, and baseball season is on deck. Greatest three words in the English language, pitchers and catchers. We have some of the best voices come on and explain what matters or what makes an upset, like Ryan does, 9-8. No, that's not an upset. No, yeah, it is, Bob. And if you're lucky, I might just tell you about my search for discounted sleep pants or my worries about what my dog just ate. Listen on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
So Nebraska has two games this week. They get Northwestern. We've already seen them against Northwestern. We talked a little about a Michigan team that's going to be limping into that one. Coming out of that Illinois game, obviously you kind of have to flush it in the sense that, you know, whatever you did in that game doesn't matter for the next one. Brian, I will say I thought it was sort of important for their psyche that they were able to show up against a team that is long and athletic. And, you know, makes you really have to work for your shot. Like, those are the sort of teams that even when they're not as talented as Illinois, and there's not that many that are, those are the sort of teams, like, that's Rutgers. Like, that's Minnesota. When they lost those games on the road, they were really struggling with the athletes of those teams, particularly in the low post. And, you know, I thought they did a nice job of continuing to play solid defense. You know, you really would like the defensive rebounding to be better than it is. There's no question about that. But I, you know, it was probably one of the better defensive performances from Tominaga so far this year. And I just felt like if I had a takeaway that wasn't, man, it was really close. And could you imagine what that would do for their resume? It was nice to see them basically go toe to toe with a team that's more athletic and more talented. And you walk out of there and you think they should have won that game.
Yeah, definitely. And to show some wherewithal on the road too, like where you get down 10 and you didn't just like succumb to that and say, okay, that's the outcome. I agree with you though. I thought they played hard defensively. You know, they got chewed up on the boards a bit in the second half, but they also turned over Illinois a lot. Like the points off turnovers were very advantageous for Nebraska throughout the game. And Nebraska, as I mentioned earlier, only turned it over 9 times. And Fred has boiled it down to those two things, turnovers and rebounding. He says, you know, you win one of those, it's going to be a close game. You win both of those, you're going to win. You lose both, you'll probably get blown out. So Nebraska won one of those, the turnovers, lost the rebound in close game. So it fits his formula if you want to really get simple with it. And it usually does compute that way as you've gone through this Husker season. So
yeah, I was doing some real mental calculus as you were talking about that.
Yeah, and it was
it does feel that way. Yeah,
but
particularly you think about that win against Wisconsin a couple of days ago or a week ago. You know, it was those Wisconsin turnovers in the second half that just opened the door for Nebraska to really be able to come back in and announce themselves.
Yeah, and. Here's the test, though, to take what you're talking about and move it forward to Northwestern. Nebraska actually out-rebounded the Wildcats 40-26 when they played here a few weeks ago. So they got after it, and they've done that at home in ways. Like sometimes they've stepped up and they've rebounded better against teams you thought might beat them on the glass in their building. So obviously Northwestern, I'm sure in their practices this week is like, that ain't happening. Like we're going to flip that stat around. And so that's going to be the test for Nebraska is to respond to a Northwestern team that is very much going to want to turn that around. And they're going to also have to deal, you know, with Boo Booey again, who the Huskers sort of got the better of the first time, which is very rare for him. Sam Hoiberg and Bryce did a really nice job on him. You know, they shut him down in that game pretty good. I'm trying to look at the stat. I thought he was like 2 of 15 off memory. But so that's going to be the test, is trying to actually do some things they did the first game against Northwestern a second straight time. which, as I say, isn't always easy. Yeah, Boo Booey was 2 of 15 for a total of 9 points against Nebraska last game out. So that's going to be tough to try to do that again.
Yeah. Did you have you looked at the look ahead for what the ticket prices are for that game? Because a couple days ago, Brian, you could get in the door price was $3, I believe, on StubHub. So if you are a Nebraska fan that lives in the Chicagoland area, you can visit the worst Big Ten city in Evanston and attend a basketball game for roughly the same cost of getting a hot dog. So, you know, you've got that going for you. So
the worst Big Ten city. It's
not even close. They don't have fans. It's not a fun place to be. And the only reason anyone ever wants to go there is its proximity to Chicago. It has nothing.
But it does have the proximity to Chicago.
That's fine. That's all I have.
Brunson and I kind of like the trip, I think.
Everybody does, because you spend all your time in Chicago and then you go to Evanston for 4 hours and then you swear you won't go back there again the rest of the time that you're in Chicago, and that's that. The worst Big Ten experience, period. They don't have fans. They don't it's terrible. Like, if you wanted to talk about just the bad Big Ten experience, you could talk about Rutgers and West Lafayette and these other places. They have people that show up and actually go there, that actually care.
Piscataway is not bad. If anybody's got a bad vibe about Piscataway, New Jersey, it's a nice little college town. I liked it.
Yeah, I think it's more the shots of the arena and the stadium that sit so empty, where it's like, does anyone seem to care? There was not a big crowd at Jersey Mike's a few weeks ago.
One of my favorite places to watch a Husker football game is Northwestern, though. I'd like the intimate setting, you know, and that it's kind of like a high school deal where the crowd is split 50-50 or 60-40 or 65-35 maybe. So I kind of
Go ahead, sorry.
No, I know that I will kind of stand up for Evanston, but not enough to like spend another 10 seconds on it.
Yeah, that's completely fine. That makes for good podcasting here. People like differences.
Embrace debate.
You probably embrace the fact that their grass sits over people's ankles when they play there at Ryan Field.
I've taken part in that over exaggeration somewhat on social media, but it is it's not as bad as it used to be. But I get what you're saying. I think they've been kind of fired up about their basketball team, like the students and
stuff.
That's
what I thought too. And then I saw it was $3 to get in, and maybe it's not anymore. Maybe that was, ahead of the game or whatever. Or maybe that was the single low price, someone selling his ticket for $3. But I think that you could get in to that game for a reasonable cost. I'll look it up right now. So you fill some time.
I can talk. If they can get this win, though, I've talked about it's going to be, I mean, they can do it. They're capable of going and getting this win. And if they could just take that offer off the table, seriously, on the road, and not leave people that discussion point. If you look around, Schaefer, there's a lot of teams that are have one or two wins on the road. So the problem with Nebraska is that offer. If they had beat Rutgers or beat, obviously Illinois, but even before that, we always talk about the Minnesota game. You'd get some of that. Oh, there are jokes about they can only play in one building and they can beat anybody, nobody on the road. That's not exactly true. It's more layered than that. They've been in position to win these games on the road, but which Illinois was promising in the fact that I thought it was the closest to 40 minutes, say 45 in this case, they played on the road. Whereas Rutgers and Minnesota were 30 minutes, where there's you could take 30 minutes and say that would work for a win, and they couldn't compute it to the whole thing. So if they could do 40 minutes again against Northwestern, understand that, hey, you win this game, you go home and take care of business, and then they actually have a week off until they play their next game where you get a little rest. That's the challenge I put forward if I'm Hoiberg with this team right now. It's I know it's been a grind and we're right in the middle of it, but we're about to get a week off. Let's finish this in style with these two games, because it could really set them up pretty down the stretch.
It has tripled. It's up to $9 now, which is not nearly as bad as when I saw it at $3. So that's slightly better. slightly better in it.
I don't know. I can't remember how many that arena.
Kind of small, I think, which is smart because it's not like, I mean, as I've said, they don't have that many fans. So you want to keep it intimate. You want to keep it loud. And to the point that you were making on winning on the road, I mean, we just saw on Monday night, Kansas State held serve at home against Kansas. That's, you know, that's not an easy place to go in and win most of the time. And Nebraska was able to do that. And so I think it's another example of they can do this on the road. They just haven't finished games. They haven't played good basketball. And they did on, they did for the most part on Sunday and probably deserved a better result, but deserve, you know, as they say, Brian, has nothing to do with it. You got to go win the game. And they've got to go do that.
What's your understanding on how much the committee traditionally looks at just metrics as opposed to like, okay, I've got the metrics in front of me, but I've also used my eyeballs and I've seen this particular team in Nebraska's case is very appealing in the fact that they beat Purdue and Wisconsin, which very few teams can do. You went toe to toe at Illinois. If I can have a personal opinion on it and I look at metrics of teams and they're kind of the same, that would mean something to me. Like if I saw with my own eyes those games and it's like, yeah, this team could maybe do a little something in the tournament because we've seen they could take down a big dog.
I think that's possible. To me, it seems the most critical factor here is you just can't have that bad loss. Like you just can't have that Michigan loss is going to count twice.
And you got to beat them twice.
Rutgers loss at home probably would count twice. So like you've got to be able to take care of those games. And right there, if you win just those three, you've got, you know, and then you find two more, you're in a good spot. But like that's sort of the game that they're playing right here. And that's why winning games against Illinois and Northwestern, you know, it's huge because you're just adding to your resume. You're also helping yourself. I mean, if Nebraska can get to the four seed and get the double bye, you're going to face a more tired team on Friday in the Big Ten tournament. And that, you know, gives you another opportunity to get a potentially important win and then set yourself up for an important game. And then, you know, if you win three games at that point, we're not even having to talk about the bubble. So it's everything matters, obviously, but it just taking care of business and taking care of the teams that are the worst on your schedule right now is so paramount to them. They just can't afford that trip up. And that's why all of these games are, you're going to feel tight. The chest is going to feel tight. You're going to be nervous. Like that's just, I mean, that's how it is, but you'd rather this feeling than, you know, looking up and realizing that Nebraska is playing and you didn't even know.
Yep. These games, I always felt like Illinois Northwestern are a nice, not that you want to look at it this way if you're inside the locker room, but like a safety net a bit. Like you could, if you can get one of these two, especially had they got Illinois, but they didn't, then if you did slip up to somebody that maybe that covers it a little bit, you know, more. But what you're talking about is interesting too with the, you know, if you could get the double bye or whatever, you also could potentially avoid in that case a little bit of a dangerous game. Not that you don't, you know, like if you, let's say you get like a seeding where you're a 5 or 6 seed and you're playing, you know, 11 or 12 seed on the you know, the first round of 4, that's a pressure game then all of a sudden if you're like sort of on the like you really got to handle that one because you have another opportunity for a bad loss. That's where the end of the schedule is both comforting, like, oh man, they could win 5 of 7 or 6 of 7, and also like, okay, you better be on your P's and Q's because one slip up and it's a bad loss and that'll hurt.
Yeah, no question about it. All right, let's finish up. Guess a random Husker hoop, or BC has the random player. I will try to get this done in 3 clues or less, and hopefully never have to guess more than once. But I'll cap myself at 2.
Okay. The era would have been he was an honorable mention Big 12 player in the year 2003.
Kerry Cohorn?
No.
I feel like he would have been gone by 2003, so now I regret saying that. All right.
No, it's all right.
I have another guess, but I'll wait. I'll wait and see what you say here.
He started in like JUCO or community college before working his way to Nebraska. You would classify
Andrew Drebo?
No. You would classify him though as like a Midwest from the Midwest.
Okay.
I kind of don't want to say the city because I think it'd give it away too easily.
I've already used my two guesses. I shouldn't have said
this is me. This is me not looking this up beforehand and taking and hoping I'm right in this. I believe he hit a big shot in that NIT game against Creighton, and I hope I'm not misidentifying. If what year was that when they played there and they beat him by one?
That would have been 2003. I'm pretty sure.
Yeah. Okay. I think he's the guy. He hit. If I'm remembering right, he had a big shot that like put him up one. It was a game where like Nate Funk got defended on right at the end, and they blocked him.
The only other name that's coming to mind, and I was like really just assuming it was a big guy, but is it Nate Johnson?
It's Nate Johnson.
Yeah. I just wasted too many guesses. I mean, I got there in my head. He had the layup against Creighton to win the game, I'm pretty sure.
Is that it?
It was an NIT game. I remember this will take you back in time a little bit for me anyways. I had my Eagle Scout board of review that night, and all I wanted was to get in there, make my case, you know, have them accept it, get this over with as quickly as possible so I could get home to watch an NIT game featuring Nebraska and Creighton. And, you know, I was awarded the Eagle Scout, which at the time mattered a lot less to me than being able to go home and watch the second half of this basketball game.
So. Would an Eagle Scout get down on officiating the way you do? Or is an Eagle Scout supposed to be like kind of above that?
An Eagle Scout is expected to be courteous and kind, you know, all of these different things. I don't know that I represent the Order of the Arrow quite as well as I probably should. But
that's all right. You know. Officials got it's a really freaking tough job. I get it. And
it is.
And all that. And no,
but they also control the fate of games in their hands. They do. So it works both ways. Like it's difficult.
They do.
But,
they do.
You know, with great power comes great responsibility, right? Like the Spider-Man quote.
That's it. And it applies to Big Ten officiating.
Someone's going to point out that came from someone that wasn't Uncle Ben in Spider-Man. That's where I know it.
No, right, I think they originated it.
Yeah. We're talking Spider-Man. That's our cue. It's time to go. A terrible performance by me and the guest the random Oscar Hooper. I'm sure I'll be hearing. Yeah, I only took like four guesses and completely wrong positions. A guy who wasn't even on the team, I think, in 2003.
Just, that's better than I usually do. I'm like, I don't know. So, like, I end up guessing like Luke Longley or something who didn't even play here. So you
Luke Longley. All right. Yeah. And for that, another edition of the Husker 24/7 Hoopscast has come to a close. Be sure to check out Husker247.com. If you're listening to this on a Tuesday, we've got a new deal going right before signing day. It should be worth your time checking out as well. So be sure to stop by the site, see what the details are on that. If you qualify, you could be an existing, I believe, subscriber or a new one and still be able to save a little bit of money. With Husker 24/7, plenty of coverage coming for basketball, plenty of coverage coming for signing day, plenty of more Husker 24/7 basketball content that you can know and expect from Brian Christopherson. For Brian, I'm Mike Shaver. We will catch you next time.